You're listening to The Bill Murphy Show, the music interview show featuring the best in the business. From behind the scenes, in the studio, and on the stage. Available by subscription for free on iTunes and at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
With another brand new digital broadcast for this Wednesday, September 12th, 2012. Brought to you by our good friends and supporters over at Lulu's Bait Shack on Fort Lauderdale Beach with great live music. World famous Lulu's. Big, gigantic fishbowl drinks, fresh Florida seafood. And during the season, which is quickly approaching, music almost every single night of the week. So you get a good representation of what's going on in South Florida over at Lulu's. Also, Millennium Laser Eye Center in Sunrise, Florida. The best in the business as far as LASIK surgery goes, I can tell you firsthand. It worked like a charm for me. I no longer need reading glasses. You can go there and see Dr. Corey Lessner and his staff, and they will take excellent personal care of you. Tell them the Bill Murphy Show sent you and get a few hundred bucks off each eye, no matter what procedure you get. As we bring another great, talented singer-songwriter onto the show, this time via Skype. I believe the last time I checked, he's San Francisco-based, but we'll follow up and make sure that that is accurate. He's also the host of the Sea Change Radio, or one of the hosts at Sea Change Radio on more than 50 radio stations, and a fellow podcaster as well. His new album, Blurred, is a very organic-sounding collection of sincere, heartfelt, classical, jazz, folk, with little smooth vocals, compositions, and also combined with a great stable of musicians contributing to it, and it's a treat to listen to. And his 2003 album, Front Porch, was also very well received. We'll get into that as well, and a lot more, and listen to a few tracks from the new record. Joining us, Alex Wise. Thanks for coming on, Alex.
Great to be here, Bill.
You let's get right into the radio thing. You happen to be, you sort of do something like this yourself. What is Sea Change Radio, and what do you do over there, and where can people find you and listen to your work over there?
Sure. Sea Change Radio is an environmentally focused radio show. It's on over 50 stations around the country, and our little tagline is covering the shift to sustainability. So people can either in their local community, they can go to seachangeradio.com, look on our affiliates list and see if their radio station is broadcasting Sea Change Radio, or they can just listen anytime they want via iTunes or on podcast.
So it's very environmentally aware. What are like the biggest bullet points that you have to say about sustainability and everything that, that everyone really should know? And, you know, obviously without, it could be a 2-hour lecture, I'm sure, if you wanted to do it. But, you know, what's a couple of quick points that you've really taken out of this from the many guests that you've talked to and the lessons that you've learned doing that show?
Well, we try to stick to a more positive vision with the show, and it's more solutions based. You can obviously go through a plethora of all the problems and all the seemingly intractable problems that we have facing us on every level, from energy and resources to policy, which seems very short-sighted. But we're actually trying to focus on advocates and people who are trying to make a positive impact to change the status quo.
And not to stay off the music subject for too long, and just to one
I'd love to talk about Sea Change Radio as much as possible.
Yeah, no, and here's somebody, you're actually someone I would love to throw this question at. I've been dying to ask somebody who's a little closer to the subject than I am. Will we see a great deal of electric automobiles in the next 5 to 10 years? Are we going to go in that direction, or is there going to be so much red tape keeping that from happening?
I think there, personally, I think there are going to be, we are going to be shifting over to electric vehicles in a greater number than obviously we have now. But I think there's also going to be some concurrent shifts in efficiency in current combustible engines, which are going to leapfrog some of the battery shortcomings that are, are keeping plug-ins from being cost effective. Once you start seeing mass scale adoption, obviously economies of scale kick in, and then those costs can come down. But you know, my wife and I just bought a car, and it wasn't a hybrid or a plug-in, and it was 3 times less than what a plug-in was, and it got 4 miles a gallon less rating. So I just didn't think we were in our right. in our price range. I didn't think we were. It made a lot of sense for us, and I think a lot of consumers probably feel that same way. But I think it's coming.
Yeah,
and people could definitely check in. We've done a lot of. We've had some great innovators. This one guy, Dave Cloud. If people want to go onto cchangeradio.com and check it out, he's a really cool. Tinkerer who's set some records with just transforming things like old Geo Metros into cars that he can drive 300, 400 miles without a charge.
Wow.
And going, you know, and these are labors of love. These are not things that could be mass produced, but it shows some of the human potential or some of the potential of the technology.
Right. Well, people can learn more at Sea Change Radio, and that's seachangeradio.com. And it's good to have a fellow podcaster on as we pave the future of radio listening together, both in the music and in the environmental realm as well. So it's very cool. And
that's right. And I should also, sorry to interrupt, but I also should mention that I try to inject a lot of my own musical taste into the show. I'm the producer as well.
And, ah.
So I have a lot of fun trying to come up with relevant music to the topic and also just turn people on to new music.
Yeah, very good. And on that, kind of in the same vein, I've kind of found a place for an instrumental piece that my brother and I put together about 8 years ago that we never did lyrics for, and that became the theme music for the show. So it was a nice way to incorporate that. So it's very cool how things work together like that.
Well, it was a very professional sounding intro. I was impressed.
Thank you very much.
Who is the voice? Who's that voice? Disembodied voice there.
Actually, that's a very recognizable voice of Scott Chapin, who's been on hundreds of TV stations doing promos all over the place. He's probably doing the intros on the news stations where you are, too. I mean, he's heard all over the country. He's a good friend of mine that I worked with in radio years ago, and I thought, I got to exploit that friendship and use his voice on there, so...
Well, you did a good job. He sounds terrific.
Yeah, it's great stuff. So it makes the show sound very professional when otherwise...
Very professional.
All right, well, let's get into this because your album, Blurred, it was when it was brought to my attention, I kind of sat down and absorbed it, and it's right up my alley, man. It's the kind of stuff that I love to chill to, and obviously you have an emphasis on vocals. You're an excellent singer. Before we play some of the music, actually, I want to get into it because I've picked out 3 tunes to play. So we'll play something from it and then kind of tear it apart. Let's talk about how Blurred got created and where it's been a while since you've actually produced a record. And when did Blurred become an idea in your head, and how long did it take to put together?
Well, my last album was 2003, the last full release. And then we had a few other tracks that we finished in 2004 with that same band. And then I went and got married and had a baby, and now she's growing up. So I was kind of in my nesting phase and did not really have the opportunity to be focusing full-time on music like I did earlier in the decade. So
right.
It's been in the back of my mind. I had all these great musicians that I used to play with, and we're all still friends, and they're all very talented, but we're all kind of in the same place where we can't just tour endlessly. And so I didn't really feel like I was in a position in my life where I wanted to jump in a van and tour around the country. And neither did my friends and fellow musicians. I know that's the template in today's music industry, is that you just have to play live as much as you can and make your money through merchandise. And that seems to be the template, is you make money on merchandise and live sales. But ultimately, that just didn't work for me. And whether it proves to be a model that is viable will bear itself out, depending on how many people end up listening to the record. But I just decided to pour myself into making the best record I could. And that's one way of reaching an audience, whether it be, there's nothing like that live interaction, but I didn't really have that flexibility in my life right now. So
yeah.
That's a long way of saying. So how Blur got made was I had a little money on hand that I decided to just pour into this labor of love. I knew it wasn't probably going to ever make any money, but I think art, you can't approach art with that in mind ever. So in January this year, 2012, I sat down and I wrote another 12 songs, and kept 10 of them. Or actually, you know, a few of these were from the 2004 sessions. There's three tracks on them. One's an instrumental, and then there's two other songs. The fourth track, Someone Else Like You, and the 11th track, Secrets. Those are from 2004.
Huh.
And then Velour, which is an instrumental. Those were all recorded 8 years ago.
Hmm.
And it took a long time with 25 other musicians involved in the process. So I would say the recording process took around 4 months. The post-production took around 2 months. And the artwork and things like that ended up taking a couple more months. So it was like an 8 month project. If you don't consider the 8 years previously.
That sounds about right. Especially when you have that many musicians working on it, it's hard to get, everybody's schedules coordinated to do that kind of thing. We're going to listen to some of it right now. In fact, you mentioned one of this one track here that I'm about to play, which is one of the ones I handpicked from it. I think from what you said, this is one of the ones that was recorded 8 years ago. We'll listen to Someone Like You. This is from Alex Wise's album Blurred. And then on the other end of it, we'll talk more about it in detail. It's Alex Wise and the Bill Murphy Show.
Someone new. What a way to learn.
with someone else like you. What a way to learn. There'll be someone else like you. What a way to
Someone Else Like You, Alex Wise, the Bill Murphy Show. It's like the first one that really, really grabbed me on the record. Very, very nice sounding now. It sounds so, I don't know, so organic and earthy and real. To me, it sounds like a lot of that was recorded live with a lot of stuff together, but I'm assuming from what you're saying with all the different instruments that you did do a lot of overdubbing there. How much of that was tracked live?
I wish I could tell you all of it, but I don't know if any of it was recorded live. Like, maybe just the drums and bass. But this was a multi-layered affair where people were contributing their efforts from all points far and wide. I had, not on that song, but it was recorded pretty similarly. Like, I had Dave Easley, who's a really talented pedal steel guitarist in New Orleans. He uploaded his contributions from New Orleans via the internet. I also had a friend who was a college buddy of mine who we used to play in a band together in college. Interestingly, the bass player from the band is now the songwriter and the guitarist, kind of the leader of a country band named Sugarland, Christian Bush.
Right.
So,
cool.
We were all in a band together, and but Matthew Smith, we were playing. We reconnected after like 20 years. He was living in San Francisco. And then he got married and moved to Vicenza, Italy. And I really liked his sound and I wanted him to be involved somehow in the project. So I gave him a little part where he worked on a solo and we were able to inject that into the music. In the third song called Blame on My Shoulder, he takes a little solo in there. So I had people from all points, far and wide, contributing to the effort. So I wanted to give it that organic feel, and I'm glad that came across to somebody who listens to a lot of music like yourself. But the confession, the honest truth is that so much of this was done asynchronously.
Yeah, well, some of the, you know, the constrictions that we have and force us to do it like that. But it seems to me, especially since you said you track the drums and the bass live together, that gives it enough of a human feel that and everybody knowing you so well and the feel of the music that it really came together nicely. So we really like the way that sounds, man.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. Yeah, we track the drums and bass together almost every song. But then there'd be dummy vocals and dummy guitar tracks.
Sure.
that we would overdub later.
Yeah, now I know you're the singer on it, but what instrumentation do you do yourself? What's your main instrument, if any?
I'm a guitarist.
Okay.
So I play guitar, and one of the things that kind of went with my nesting period the last 8 years is I started learning piano, and we have a baby grand in the house, and so I did most of the writing for this album on piano, although Emery Dora is a really talented pianist, and I just felt like it wouldn't be doing listeners a favor having my crappy piano playing tinkling along on there, so I brought in a ringer.
We're listening to the record Blurred. It's the new one from Alex Wise, and he's talking to us from the San Francisco area. That is where you are these days, right?
Indeed. I've been here since the late 90s. I lived in Japan for much of the 90s.
Wow.
I was in grad school in Boston. Yeah, and actually, my first record deal was in Japan. I did pretty well with that with a funk band called The Shreep.
Right.
And we were big in Japan, as Tom Waits would say. So my Japanese is a little rusty, but I speak pretty well, and I used to work for Warner Brothers and News Corp in Japan, and before that, I lived in Boston, and my dad and sister and a lot of family live in New Orleans, so I get a lot of spiritual musical influence from New Orleans.
Yeah, well, and a couple of great music pockets in New Orleans and Boston there, but talk a little bit about the music scene in Japan. I always love to talk about how music is received and the scenes in the various places in the world. What did you take away from the music scene in Japan?
Well, it's a very, from the gaijin, the expat community, there's a very hungry there's a hungry audience waiting to hear music that isn't canned and isn't karaoke. So I had some pretty devoted followers. We played a weekly gig, and it was a great place to really get your live chops down. However, whenever I would play like on my own or in a smaller setting without a band, in smaller bars, you'd inevitably get the karaoke mindset that would take over, and you'd have to know like Hey Jude and lots of Beatles songs, Yesterday, Hotel sure. California. These are the songs that like became like a little jukebox for people. It's good for your chops. You got to learn all these songs, but after a while, it's a little numbing.
Right. And you have to, and it's good to keep the audience occupied and entertained that way, and then you can throw some of your own stuff at them as well.
I mean, one of the problems was the Roppongi in Tokyo, which is a big nightlife area. It's just a big social scene, and sometimes you're playing in front of an audience that, like, we would play an acoustic like Grateful Dead cover band once. I played in this little club that was like a rave kind of scene late at night, but we'd be playing like our hippie music from like 10 to midnight, and all the people would start rolling in. They were like, where's the electronica, where's the rave music? And so like you'd have to just say, hey, it's my friend's bar, we're playing what we want to play.
So that,
yeah. And then there's a huge military base near Tokyo and Yokohama, and a lot of these kids would be coming in for their first, you know, time away from their families, and see these 18, 19-year-old kids who start getting a little drunk, and that's where we're going to take a little break, little set break, and wait for the room to clear. You know, fights would break out half the time, so
yeah.
It was fun. It was like playing in the Wild West.
Very cool. All right, well, we're going to sample some more of this record here, and to give a good contrast of what's happening on the record and where it goes, the different directions. I know I talked about several different genres that are sort of incorporated into this record. There's a little bit of a jazz feel on this one, and I always love instrumental tracks, especially ones this intricate. Velour is the next track I'm going to play. Talk a little bit about how this one was constructed and put together, and it must have been a little bit more of an involved process, you know, writing this one and putting it together.
This one actually was a quickie. The instrumentals tend to work a little easier in terms of you don't have to figure out as many melodies, and you just let good musicians go. So I tried to give as much leeway to improvisation as I could, and we decided that there'd be little breaks in there for working around the room. And I think that gives it the live feel. We did record more of this live. We recorded this at Hyde Street Studios, which is kind of a famous studio in San Francisco. It used to be Wally Heider's Pacific Recording Studio, where Jerry Garcia and Miles Davis, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Jefferson Airplane, Deep Purple, everybody's recorded there. It's down in the Tenderloin. So we were in this great room down there, and using Frank Sinatra's old piano, this white Yamaha, which I think the Allman Brothers recorded on as well.
Wow.
And so this song, Velour, it was something that I worked out with Scott Foster, who's just a terrific guitarist, who's on this track as well. And he was my jazz teacher back in the day. He's a really accomplished jazz player. He taught both me and Kirk Hammett from Metallica jazz at the same time back in the late 90s. So like Kirk and I would go to see our teacher performing in a little jazz club in the Haight-Ashbury district and stuff. So, that gave me, I'm not a big Metallica fan, as you can probably tell from my style of music, but it gave me newfound respect for Metallica, knowing that somebody who's considered one of the world's best guitarists was still taking lessons.
Nice.
I think that's important lesson for all musicians.
Yeah, expanded your horizon, so to speak. Very cool.
Right. This is just an exercise that we turned into an instrumental tune. I tried to, it was very kind of, I don't know, meters meets Sesame Street, I might say.
Velour from Alex Wise's album called Blurred on The Bill Murphy Show. From Alex Wise, the album Blurred. We're talking to him from San Francisco, and that's an instrumental tune from that, and we heard a little bit about it at the beginning. What I want to know after listening to that song that time is, who's the bass player on that? Boy, that's some great bass playing there.
Yeah, he's a monster. That's John Herrera, who's the technical editor of Bass Player Magazine. So if you're a bassist out there and you buy Bass Player Magazine and you look at the transcriptions of how to play something, there's a good chance that you've come across John's work.
Wow. Very cool. And another one of those tracks, and that's what I love about those instrumental jazzy tracks, is that every time you listen to it, you can kind of focus in on a different instrument each time and go in different directions with each listen. And that time the bass grabbed me on that. You said there was a big gap between Front Porch, which was released in 2003, and then this one that you're doing now called Blurred that you've just released. I mean, the business has changed immensely in that amount of time. What are you taking away about the changes in the business and how things work now as opposed to when you were working on your record in 03?
It kind of went into, it informed the creative process in a lot of ways, and it was liberating in that. Back in 2002, 2003, the labels weren't technically dead yet, and they were still, you know, Napster was just kind of rearing its ugly head. Well, ugly might be a poor choice of words, but rearing its head.
Right.
And so I felt like I needed to have a more, or at least not from a commercial standpoint, but just also creatively at that point, I wanted to make a more cohesive album that just sounded like all the way through. I wanted, like, there's just a similar vocal sound, and I wanted it to sound, I called it Acoustic Swamp. So it was kind of a departure from my previous album, which was like a funk horn-based thing. But Front Porch was very, that name Front Porch, I just wanted it to feel like a guy kicking back on his front porch, playing some acoustic instruments with friends. And so I wanted it to have that cohesion. But nowadays, in today's music world, listeners inevitably listen to songs. They don't listen to an album all the way through. At least I don't, and I imagine a lot of people have changed their listening habits due to iTunes and
and
there are enormous digital catalogs that people now have acquired, and also streaming and Pandora and all these other things that you don't necessarily need to be tied to a genre.
Right.
And so I decided to go the opposite direction of trying to keep it all within that cohesive album structure and have all 12 of the songs on Blurred be as disparate from them as I wanted. And
yeah.
So there's like a Latin jazz cover of a gangster rap tune. There's a kid song that I wrote with my 4-year-old daughter. It's a children's song with like mandolin and little kids talking about nature. And all the proceeds for that song, by the way, are going to go to 350.org to help solve the climate crisis. And there's first time I ever recorded with strings. I had some symphony musicians come in and play strings on there. So there's that first song that you might listen to first when you put on a CD, The Rule of Joy, is a kind of a hybrid of all the different instrumentation that I'm using, but it's definitely not a precursor for what's to come.
Sure.
That's a challenge when you're giving it to people who made their judgment from the first song on the album. But I'm hoping in this kind of ADD, shuffle-oriented listener environment that one of these songs will resonate with them.
Absolutely, and I'm glad that you came on to share this record with you. I wish you all the luck in the world with it. But before we wrap things up, we're going to play one more track, and then after we play this one, you'll tell us a little bit about how people can find it. I was going to ask you about gigs that you're doing, but it sounds like you've just like got this.
I'm going to be in Miami first week of October. I haven't established where and when I'm playing. At the end of September, I'll be in Richmond, Virginia, and then I'll be in Miami and then Atlanta. So I'll be playing some small solo acoustic gigs. If people want to hear a slightly different take on these more elaborate compositions that are on the new release,
very
they
nice.
Should come on out. People can go to alexwise.com and find out where and when the gigs are. I don't think they've been solidified yet.
All right, cool. Well, alexwise.com, and we'll have that link on the page for the show here as well, so people can go there directly. Actually, while they're listening to you, they can do that as well and keep up with you. And I will obviously keep an eye out for your visit to Miami in October. Now, before we wrap things up, we're going to play the title track from the record Blurred. I'm wondering where the title came from. It's obviously the title track. What is the story behind the Blurred theme?
Well, it was a word in the song which didn't have a real it wasn't a chorus that hit you over the head, but at the very end of the song it said lines are blurred, and I just think that's we live in a complicated world, and I thought that was a good image. Also, I thought it would lend itself to good visuals as well, and one of my favorite artist is a good friend of mine, Daniel Kelly. He's a Kyoto, Japan-based painter, and I really wanted him to contribute to the project as well. So he painted the cover art on the album, and he's a kind of an impressionist painter who uses a lot of not the sharpest images. So I thought that it would go right into his wheelhouse, so to speak.
Ah, very cool. So here it is, the title track. It's Blurred, from Alex Wise and the Bill Murphy Show.
We always do.
Blurred from Alex Wise, a title track from the record. Alex on the show. You can find his record on iTunes or at his Bandcamp site, and you can check it out. The cover has a blurred photo of him up there, quite appropriately. Very, very nice sound. I like the melody on that one, Alex. It's a job well done, and you've got a nice product here, and I wish you all the best with this record.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate you sharing my music with your listeners. Keep up the good work on your own, man.
Thank you, sir. And I also want to make sure that you pass along my compliments to the rest of the guys in the band, all the cats that you got on that. You guys came together nicely, and it seems in some cases, you know, overdubbing and sending in tracks from all over the world, and it's nice to see something come together that actually sounds like you guys are all in the same room when you go through the process like that. It sounds like a painstaking process, but it came out great.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. Thanks again.
All right, we will look for you in October. That is Alex Wise. Hang on the phone for just a second, Alex, and we'll say our final goodbyes. The rest of you listening, we really appreciate you listening, liking, and sharing. Please continue to do so. And check back regularly at BillMurphyShow.com. More shows coming up. Big surprises that I can't tell you about yet because they're not completely confirmed, but if we get the big names that are talking to us right now, it's going to be very exciting. Catch you next time right here at BillMurphyShow.com.
Subscribe to the Bill Murphy Show podcast for free at iTunes. You can post comments about today's show, listen to archived episodes, and like the show on Facebook by visiting BillMurphyShow.com. A presentation of Bill Murphy Productions.